To see her is to take a sudden.
Hello, this is David Frankham, Hollywood actor and the voice of Sergeant Tibbs in 101 Dalmatians. And you're listening to my good friend, Johnny Woodlock, on the Way Back Country Jamboree here on CFRC 101.9 FM.
At first you think Cruella is a devil, but after time has worn away the shock, you come to realize you've seen her kind of eyes watching you from underneath.
Well, welcome back, all you ghostly goblins and werewolves out there in Radio Land. Yes, this here is your ghost of a host, Johnny Woodlock, and this is the 7th annual tribute to the Way Back Haunted Hayride. We are still coming to you via the Woodlock Ranch and Studios, stationed in Cornwall, Ontario, and we can also be heard via local radio dial at CFRC 101.9 FM. We can also be heard World Wide Web via the World Wide Spider Web at www.cfrc.ca and Cogeco Cable at channel 282. As we begin the second hour of this spectacular tribute to Halloween 2023, I would like to salute two of the rockier ghost story songs of country music. First, we'll hear from the Charlie Daniels Band, including Charlie Daniels himself, and a song that is one of my all-time favorites of Charlie's, titled The Legend of Woolly Swamp. Then we'll follow with the legendary Jim Stafford and his story song of Swamp Witch. I would like to mention that I spent a lot of time growing up in the Everglades of Florida as a young child with Mama and Papa, and I would also like to mention that the swamps are some of the most mythical, yet dangerous, and even enchanting places in the south of the United States, whether it be the bayous in Louisiana or the Everglades in Florida. These are some of the greatest places to get lost or also find a local folklore. So with that, happy Halloween. Whoa!
A strong man dies with pride. Things that crawl and things that fly and things that creep around on the ground. And they say the ghost of Lucius Clay gets up and he walks around. But I couldn't believe it. I just had to find out for myself and I couldn't conceive it. Cause I never would listen to nobody else and I couldn't believe it. I just had to find out for myself. There's some things in this world you just can't explain.
Swamp way back in Booger Woods. He never did do a lot of harm in the world, but he never did do no good. People didn't think too much of him. They all thought he acted funny. The old man didn't care about people anyway. All he cared about was his money. He'd stuff it all down into mason jars and he'd bury it all around. And on certain nights, if the moon was right, he'd dig it up out of the ground. He'd pour it all out on the floor of his shack and run his fingers through it. Yeah, Lucius Clay was a greedy old man, and that's all there was to it.
But I couldn't believe it. I just had to find out for myself, and I couldn't conceive it. Cause I never would listen to nobody else, and I couldn't believe it. I just had to find out for myself, but there's some things in this world you just can't explain.
White trash, he lived over on Carver's Creek. They were mean as a snake and sneaky as a cat and belligerent when they'd speak. One night the oldest brother said, y'all meet me in the woody swamp later, and we'll take old Lucius's money and we'll feed him to the alligators. They found the old man out in the back with a shovel in his hand, 13 rusty mason jars he just dug up out of the sand. And they all went crazy and they beat the old man and they picked him up off the ground and threw him in the swamp and stood there and laughed as the black water sucked him down. Then they turned around and went back to the shack and picked up the money and ran. They hadn't gone nowhere when they realized struggled and they screamed, but they couldn't get away. And just before they went under, they could hear that old man laughing in a voice as loud as thunder. It's been 50 years ago, and you can go by there yet. There's a spot in the yard in the back of that shack where the ground is always wet. And on certain nights, if the moon is right, down by that dark footpath, you can hear three young men screaming.
A strong man dies of pride. Things that crawl and things that fly, things that creep around on the ground. And they say the ghost of the Lucius Clay gets up and he walks around. But I couldn't believe it, I just had to find out for myself. And I couldn't conceive it, cause I never would listen to nobody else. And I couldn't believe it, I just had to find out for myself. But there's some things in this world you just can't explain.
Some things in this world you just can't explain. Blackwater Hattie lived back in the swamp where strange green reptiles crawl. Snakes hang thick from the cypress trees like sausage on a smokehouse wall. Where the swamp is alive with a thousand eyes, and all of them watching you. Stay off the track of Hattie Shack in the back of the Black Bayou. Way up the road from Hattie Shack lies a sleepy little Okeechobee town. Talk a swamp witch, a Hattie, lock you in when the sun go down. Rumors of what she done, rumors of what she do. Kept folks off a track of Hattie Shack in the back of the Black Bayou. One day brought the rain stayed on and the swamp water overflowed. Skeeters and the fever grabbed the town like a fist. Doc Jackson was the first to go. Some said the plague was brought by Hattie. There was talk of a hanging too. But the talk got shackled by the howls and the cackles from the bowels of the Black Bayou. Early one morn, between dark and dawn, when shadows fill the sky, came an unseen caller on a town where hope run dry. In the square there was found a big black round vat full of gurgling brew. Whispering sounds as the folks gathered round, it came from the Black Bayou. Ain't much pride when you're trapped inside a slowly sinking ship. Scooped up the liquid deep and green, and the whole town took a sip. Fever went away, and the very next day the skies again were blue. Let's thank old Hattie for saving our town. We'll fetch it from the Black Bayou. Party of 10 of the town's best men headed for Hattie Shack. Said swamp witch magic was useful and good, and they're gonna bring Hattie back. Never found Hattie, and they never found the shack, and they never made a trip back in. Cause a parchment note they found tacked to a stump said, don't come looking again.
you ghostly goblins out there in Radio Land. This here is your host with the most, or should I say ghost of a host, Johnny Woodlock, for the 7th anniversary of the Wayback Haunted Hayride. Whoa! Now, seeing that we've got our next guest on the Wayback Country Jamboree, our number 2 of 4 special guests, I would like to pay tribute to the Universal Monster movies, which started in 1923 with The Hunchback of Notre Dame. It went on to gain such fame with classics like Dracula, Creature from the Black Lagoon, and of course, this next lady's father as the legendary Frankenstein monster. Yes, we've got our next guest on the Wayback Haunted Hayride this morning, and this lady's father was the true king of horror legends of the Universal Monster movies, having brought us the legendary Frankenstein monster, among many other memorable characters, including the Grinch that stole Christmas and many others. Brings me great honor to welcome back to the Wayback Haunted Hayride this year, a true friend of mine, and someone I have been a friend of for many years, Miss Sarah Karloff, the daughter and the only child of our beloved Boris Karloff. Following this interview, we will hear from Big B, Carnegie, and the House of Frankenstein, which is one of our all-time favorite classics here at the Wayback Haunted Hayride. So without any further interruption, here is Miss Sarah Karloff.
Hi, how are you?
Very good, Sarah. It's a pleasure to be talking to you.
Thank you.
So let's go back to how your father obtained the name Boris Karloff. I understand he was born William Henry Pratt.
Yes, he was the youngest of 9 children. He was British, and he was born William Henry Pratt, you're correct. Mm-hmm. There are all sorts of stories about how he took the name Boris Karloff and when he did. But he always said it was while he was still in Canada doing repertory theater that he took the name Karloff from somewhere way back on his mother's side of the family.
Okay.
Although no biographer has ever found it.
I see.
And he took Karloff from thin air. And that's the story he always told, and so I stick with that story.
Exactly, as we should, exactly, yes. Now, your father, I understand, appeared in 80 movies before landing his role as Frankenstein's monster.
Yes, and he always said no one saw the first 80 films. Frankenstein was his 81st film, but he said no one saw the first 80.
I see.
So he was an overnight star after being in the business 20 years,
yes.
10 years in repertory theater in British Columbia, and then 10 years in Hollywood when nobody knew he was there except him. He made 80 films before Frankenstein when he got his huge break when James Whale asked him if he'd test for the role of Frankenstein.
Okay, and I understand that Bela Lugosi was supposed to be Frankenstein, but he turned it down. Do you know much about this?
Well, I know that Bela was asked to test for it first, but he didn't want to play it because it was a non-speaking role.
Okay.
And because the makeup was so heavy and so covered his face so much that he was not anxious to play such a role.
Okay.
That's my understanding.
I see.
And so they changed directors, and my father was asked to test for the role, and at that point my father was a starving actor, so he was glad to take almost any role.
And yes, for sure.
No one knew that it would be the tremendous hit that it was. It was thanks to the makeup genius of Jack Pierce and the direction of James Whale, and
yeah.
it was just a wonderful marriage of talents. The rest of the cast, of course, and the direction and the script, and certainly my father always credited with Jack Pierce being an absolute genius as far as makeup was concerned.
Yes, he was.
And so the way my father played the role, and it was just a combination of marvelous talents and cooperation amongst them all, and it turned out to be this wonderfully historic, iconic film.
Yes, exactly. And now in its 92nd year, I understand.
I know.
Yeah. What is it like to be the daughter of Boris Karloff, and have you ever seen the movie, or?
Oh, I've seen the movie many, many, many times.
Yes.
And to be his daughter is a great honor. He was a lovely human being, a very funny sense of humor, off and turned back on himself. He was could not have been more different than the roles he played. He was a very typical English gentleman with a lovely sense of humor and a wonderful, wonderful man.
And now going back into Frankenstein for a minute, I understand that he, it's been mentioned that he wasn't even invited to the premiere.
That's correct.
Yes.
No one expected the creature to be the star of the film. Everybody expected Colin Clive, Dr. Frankenstein, to be the star of the film. And so my father really, when he took the part, was just a bit part player, and no one expected the creature to turn out to be the real star of the film.
Now, was he ever typecast?
Oh, of course he was typecast.
Yeah.
Many, many horror roles. But he also had a very broad-based career. He played many, many other types of roles, and he enjoyed doing, you know, all sorts of roles. And certainly in the 60s when he played in some Roger Corman films with Bela Lugosi and
yes.
Janey and with Vincent Price and... especially with Vincent Price and Peter Lorre, they had an opportunity to spoof their own boogeyman images.
Yes,
and
they
had a marvelous time on the set, you know, spoofing their own boogeyman images.
Exactly. They were very much the, as we look upon Jason and different ones, they were those people in their era.
They certainly were.
Yeah.
And they were the horror trio, but they all knew each other very well, enjoyed working together. And my father did, had three television series of his own.
Yes.
He did a lot of radio work, a huge body of radio work, and he starred on many, many television series, some drama series. And so he did films like Targets with Peter Bogdanovich. He was starred on Broadway in five plays.
Exactly.
Peter Pan and Arsenic and Old Lace. And then The Lark opposite Julie Harris was one of his finest performances. So
and he did a lot of work for the children, too.
Yes. And then, of course, he was one of the founding members of the Screen Actors.
Exactly.
His card number was number 9.
Yes.
And so he was very fortunate in all the variety of work that he was able to do.
Okay.
He was, of course, known as a horror icon, but his work base was huge.
Exactly.
He loved everything he did.
Yes.
He loved doing television. He loved doing radio. He loved doing live theater.
Mm-hmm.
He enjoyed, as does every actor, the instantaneous feedback from a live audience. He enjoyed live television.
Oh.
He loved starring on shows like The Dinosaur Show or The Carol Burnett Show, where indeed he could spoof his own boogeyman image. So his own sense of humor came through.
Yes, for sure. Now, we were mentioning the Screen Actors Guild. What was that like for him to found that?
Well, when the Screen Actors Guild was founded in 1933,
mm-hmm.
it was like forming a union against the all-powerful studios. And so they used to park their cars blocks away from one another's houses and walk to one another's houses, and they would dance by one another on the dance floor at parties and whisper, meeting Tuesday night at so-and-so's house and dance on by. Because had they been found out before they really got their legs as this group of actors forming this union,
mm-hmm.
They would have been blackballed and never worked again.
And never worked again, exactly.
Very dangerous work. And once SAG got its legs and got formed, I mean, it's one of the most important unions, if you like, in Hollywood. But at its beginning, it was very, very dangerous to the actors' careers. They would never have worked again.
I see.
So be a founding member was quite an accomplishment, something my father was always very proud of.
Exactly. What is your thoughts on the strike right now? What do you think there's what
well,
is that?
Well, I think the actors are correct.
Yes.
Not just because my father was an actor, but
mm-hmm.
I think the actors' position is defending their rights that
exactly.
they should the studio should not be able to use their images over and over again without paying the actors.
That's right, I agree.
Artificial intelligence does not have the right to take away an actor's performance mm-hmm. and use it over and over again.
Exactly, that's for sure. Now, I also understand that Boris was not a fond of the name horror as much as he was terror.
Correct. He felt horror denoted blood and guts spilled all over one's lap, and mm-hmm. the word terror invited the intelligence and involvement of the audience in what's going on the screen, and the word horror insulted the intelligence of the audience.
Yeah, one thinks of horror as blood and guts and what have you, yes, for sure. Now, what would some of your favorite memories have been of your father that we not realize as fans?
Well, that he was so completely opposite from the roles that he played, and mm-hmm. that he was such a well-educated, articulate, well-read man, that he had a lovely, gentle sense of humor, that he was such a gentleman. I know that when my godmother wrote one of the biographies about my father, yes. she said almost to a person when she interviewed them, they would preface their remarks by saying, "Oh, dear Boris." And so she titled the book, "Dear Boris."
Okay.
People who knew him adored him, and people who worked with him respected him greatly. He was always prepared with his lines. He adored his profession. He was a consummate professional, and he was a gentlest of human beings.
There was a story about how humble he was when it came to a Grammy Award that he got for The Grinch.
Yeah, he won a Grammy for How the Grinch Stole Christmas, and yes. he wasn't able to attend, so he asked his agent to accept the award for him. And so the next time, my father happened to be in England at the time of the award ceremony, so next time he came over from England and to Hollywood, he went to his agent's office, and his agent said, "Here, Boris, here's your Grammy," and held it out to my father, and my father took the Grammy and looked at it and turned it around in his hand, and he said, "Looks like a bloody doorstop," and he took it and put it over at the door in his agent's office, and he left it there.
I see.
He just wasn't into awards. Okay. At all. And then one time when he was being made up for Route 66 as Mother Muffin,
mm-hmm.
and he was in the makeup chair, and when they finished with the makeup and he looked in the mirror, he said, "Oh, I look like a two-bit whore."
Yes.
he had this wonderful
sense of humor.
And he was very, very self-effacing with his humor and very, very modest.
Yes.
He was not the typical Hollywood star or certainly an icon.
I see. So was he a private person, really?
Very private. He was very modest. He's simply, you would never imagine that he had made 167 films. You would never imagine he'd starred on Broadway in five films. You would never imagine the body of radio work he'd done. Just could not imagine that this was a very, very famous actor and Hollywood star.
I see.
Two stars on I had one on Hollywood Boulevard and one on Vine.
Okay.
And you just wouldn't imagine that was the man you were sitting talking with.
Amazing.
He was a wonderful listener.
Yeah.
And he was more interested in you than talking about himself.
That's what I thought, yes, for sure. I have a couple more questions for you this morning. But first of all, there's been many, as you mentioned, books and stories written on your father. What would the one source be that you would share with us about a project that tells about your father's work?
There's one written by Stephen Jacobs, a British author.
Mm-hmm.
He spent 10 years researching his book, so it's almost flawless in its information and depth of research.
Mm-hmm.
And I would absolutely recommend it. It's Boris Karloff, More Than a Monster.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to find. You have to go on Amazon and search to find one. And Stephen is doing a new book. It's about ready for print in England, and it will. It's a compendium on my father.
Oh, nice.
And it
yeah.
A wonderful book.
Oh, great.
It will be available on Amazon by demand.
Okay, sure. And so the last question for today is, what does Halloween mean to you, or what plans do you have?
Well, Halloween, my father always said Halloween was his busy season.
Yes.
And I find it to be my busy season, too. I go different conventions, and my computer is jammed with emails and questions and
yes.
compliments on my father.
Mm-hmm.
It's very much my busy season, and one of the worst kept secrets is I don't like scary movies.
Yes, okay.
So, you know, and I think my father would find some of today's films
distasteful.
Rather
yeah.
horrifying.
Yes, for sure. I could see that, because he and Bela and Lon, they all had class to them compared to today's horror sections of genre, for sure.
Absolutely.
But with that, sir, I want to wish you a very happy Halloween, and thank you for being on our show.
Well, thank you for inviting me again, and I've enjoyed the interview, and I wish all your listeners the best, and a happy Halloween, and a Merry Christmas for the Grinch, too.
Thank you, for sure. And maybe I can get you on the show for Christmas season. Yes.
That would be lovely. I'd enjoy that.
Yes.
And the How the Grinch Stole Christmas was something my father really enjoyed doing, because he did a 20-some children's albums, according to the wonderful, like, Rudyard Kipling and Hans Christian Andersen.
Yes.
So he loved working and doing works for children.
Well, that's great, great, yes. Including The Legend of Sleepy Hollow. I have an old album of him doing that as well.
Oh, yes, and one of my favorite projects that I'm working on is trying to get all those recordings animated. I think they would be wonderful.
They sure would. Well, with that, we wish you a happy Halloween, Sarah. Have a good day.
Thank you. Happy Halloween, and again, thank you for having me on your show.
Anytime.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Now you kids gather around, 'cause at this house, there is something special going down. Now the moon is bright, time to take a check. Call the nice delight to see the monster baby.
now, friends, following that great interview with our dear friend Sarah Karloff, we are back here on the Way Back Haunted Hayride, and let's pay tribute to some fairy ghostly songs and tales from the Halloween songs of our great Canadian Northern legends. With that mentioned, we will pay tribute to some great Canadian Northern gems by truly great Canadian legends, with mentioning here the spooky side of Canadian country music. First, we'll hear from a legendary man himself, Smiley Bates, in a spooky yet very tear-jerking song titled Genie's Afraid of the Dark. Then we'll follow with Buddy Reynolds in a classic about the mysterious creature Ogopogo, which is said to be living in the Okanagan Lake in British Columbia. Then we'll wrap up with another classic by the legendary Canadian songwriter and singer from Kingston here, and a fellow Kingstonian name of Tom Mawini, and has his classic titled Ghostly Goblin, which was recorded also by his name, Zucchini Alley. With that said, I hope y'all enjoy these spectacular Canadian gems, and happy Halloween.
Her two little feet would come running into our bedroom almost every night. Her soft little face would be wet from her tears, and her little heart pounding with fright. She'd hold out her arms and climb in beside us. In a small voice, we'd hear her remark, Mommy and Daddy, can I sleep here with you? 'Cause Jeannie's afraid of the dark. One day in the summer, we took some flowers to place on some old family graves. Jeannie said, Mommy, ain't it dark in the ground? Oh, Daddy, I'd be so afraid. Then she looked up at her mommy and me and said something that broke both our hearts. She said, when I die, please don't bury me, 'cause Jeannie's afraid of the dark. Jeannie was always afraid of the dark, and we never could understand why. 'Cause we looked after Jeannie with the very best of care, 'cause Jeannie was our only child. Perhaps it was death that she was so afraid of, 'cause it took her one dark, stormy night. I think we always knew that we'd never see Jeannie grown. It seemed that she was destined to die. But on Jeannie's grave we placed an eternal flame that glows and never loses its spark. And on the darkest of night there's always a light, 'cause Jeannie's afraid of the dark. Our Jeannie's afraid of the dark.
Believe it if you can. There's an Ogopogo swimming down in Ogopogo land. A dragon's head he's supposed to have, and his eyes are balls of flame. It's 40 fathoms from his tail up to his shaggy mane. I'm telling you because it's true. Believe it if you can. There's an Ogopogo swimming down in Ogopogo land. men call it Okanagan that I can't deny. That means stormy waters where the Ogopogo lies. And this is true, I'm telling you, when he gets mad, I'm told. The thunders crash and the lightnings flash and the dark blue waters roll. Now that's as true as true can be, I hope you understand. That's the way I heard it down in Ogopogo land. But if you ever see an Ogopogo, take it right from me. Lock your cage up tight tonight and throw away the key. Ogopogo, if you believe that you're a bigger fool than me.
Has arrived and the leaves are falling down. In late October when the nights grow long, then Halloween comes around. I am a ghostly goblin, it's my favorite time of year. I get together with my ghoulish friends and we romp and wander till the evening ends. We're so happy Halloween's here. The bats all twitter as they flit about. Is that one in your hair? Ah! Ghastly laughter from behind a door. When you open it, no one's there. I am a ghostly goblin, it's my favorite time of year. I get together with my ghoulish friends and we romp and wander till the evening ends. We're so happy Halloween's here. Don't let a black cat cross your path, especially not tonight. Watch for witches on broomsticks flying in the eerie pale moonlight. I am a ghostly goblin, it's my favorite time of year. I get together with my ghoulish friends and we romp and wander till the evening ends. We're so happy Halloween's here. All of the kids yell trick or treat and it's music to my ears. I can hardly wait till the sky turns dark and the horrible horde appears. I am a ghostly goblin, it's my favorite time of year. I get together with my fiendish friends and we romp and wander till the evening ends. We're so happy Halloween's here.
Poor unfortunate souls in pain, in need. This one longing to be thinner, that one wants to get the girl, and do I help them?
Yes, indeed.
Hi, this is Pat Carroll, the voice of Ursula in The Little Mermaid, and I want to wish you all a happy, happy Halloween with my good friend Johnny Woodcock. Boo!
But on the whole, I've been a saint to those poor, unfortunate souls.
And now, you ghostly goblins and trick-or-treaters looking for another great interview with our dear friends of Halloween, let's pay tribute to our third guest on the Way Back Haunted Hayride this morning. And this legend is truly a part of the Alfred Hitchcock legacy and is remembered today for her body of work as the body double for Janet Leigh in the iconic shower scene in Psycho, which came out 63 years ago this September. This horror favorite is become a true cult favorite in the Halloween and horror collections of Alfred Hitchcock, so it is brings me great honor to welcome to the 7th anniversary of the Way Back Haunted Hayride, a good friend of ours, Miss Marley Renfro. Following this interview with Miss Marley, we will hear a classic favorite by Jumpin' Gene Simmons titled This Haunted House. I hope y'all enjoy this interview, and here is Miss Marley Renfro.
Hi, Johnny.
Well, it's a pleasure to be talking to you, Marley. Do you prefer Marley or Miss Renfro?
Marley.
Marley? Okay, sure. So let's go back to when and how you got acquainted with Alfred Hitchcock.
Well, I was a pin-up model at the time, and I was working with the photographer Mario Caselli. At that time, and then for photographs on the cover of TV Guide magazine, it almost always was Mario Caselli's work.
Okay.
Anyway, I was posing for him, and at the end he said, oh, by the way, he said, Universal is looking for a pin-up model. He says, I'm really not sure what, but he says, I have a phone number if you want to call. So I wrote it down, and I called and made an appointment to speak with some gentleman. And so I get to the appointment, and we talked for a little bit, and then he said, just a minute. And he came back, and he says, okay, follow me. And I followed him, and he took me in to see Alfred Hitchcock. That was how I found out I might be working with Alfred Hitchcock.
I see. Okay. And what do you remember about making the film?
Oh, my goodness. So many things. Well, for one thing, I was hired to work for a couple of days.
Yes.
Literally a few days. And to be paid straight of $500.
Okay.
And actually, I would have done it for free just to be working with Alfred Hitchcock. But I didn't mention that.
Exactly. For sure. For sure. Yes.
Right. So basically, I had to get undressed in front of Alfred Hitchcock, down to my underwear. And then I also had to do the same for Janet Lee.
Yes.
And it showed that we were both the same height and basically both had the same figure. So I was hired. I had to show up at makeup at Universal at 5 in the morning. I don't remember the day. But so I was in makeup for, I don't know, about 3-4 hours, I think, something like that. They put on a gray wig.
Okay.
Curly.
Yeah.
Curly. I had light red, pretty long hair.
Nice.
And, but anyway, so it sort of matched Janet's hair at the time. Oh, it's black and white, so you couldn't really see.
Yes, true. Very true.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So, you know, when I was there the first time, they took me this, the sound stage, and it's a huge, huge cavernous building. I mean, just huge. And there, this little set is in there, the shower scene.
Yes.
And so I saw it. And then also there was a part of the interior of the mansion in there also. And then part of the motel itself. Well, I wasn't familiar with what it's what. I realized after I'd been working on it, you know, putting it all together. And then, of course, when I saw the movie, I really put it all together.
Exactly. Yes.
Anyway, I just saw basically the soundstage, and so then after makeup, one of the makeup men walked me to the soundstage, and we approach it. There, a red light is blinking on and off, and it said no admittance, closed set. And I thought, wow. So we went in and opened the door, walked in, and there on the right is a set of bleachers. And I don't know, about, I'd say at least 30 people were up there, mostly men, I guess. I don't know if there's a woman on there or not. I'm trying to think. I knew one actor, and I can't place him right now. But anyway, so I thought, oh, my goodness, they're thinking they're going to see a stripper now, which I'm not, and I'm just a model, pin-up model.
Yes.
And I'm also, at the time, I was a nudist. Being without clothes, among other people, just felt very comfortable for me. I would go to the camps and basically, besides swimming, play volleyball. I loved volleyball. So I had on a light seersucker cotton robe, and I just had full makeup on my whole body. And so we went up to the shower scene, and they're filming, and then Hitchcock says, okay, Miss Renfrew. So I knew I just had to set the stage for civility, I guess you could say. Anyway, I just took my robe off just nonchalantly and did a little stretch scratching, you know, mm-hmm. like you would do before you play a game or whatever. And that was it. You know, I mm-hmm. after working there, I felt that Mr. Hitchcock had told everybody working on the set that had to do, you know, with the shower scene.
Yes.
Oh, hanky-panky, this is very serious.
Exactly.
I don't want any sniggering or anything. Mm-hmm. This mm-hmm. is very, very just serious. So, and there wasn't. It was just all very professionally done. And plus me, I'm comfortable, you know, and I'm not.
Yes, for sure. Yes.
Dancing around and stuff like that. That just helped also.
So what was Alfred Hitchcock like to work with?
Wonderful. He knew exactly what he wanted for everything.
I see.
There was only one scene we had to do a second take on. All the others were just in one take because
he
told me what he wanted and I get it.
Yes.
Well, after Sir Tony pulls me out of the bathtub
mm-hmm.
and puts me in the shower curtain, wraps me up. He reaches down, picks up under my knees and my shoulders, and starts to lift me. And he gets me up about 6 inches, and bang, drops
wow.
me down. And
yes.
it was because he was lifting with his back, so they told him how, you know, stand and kneel
mm-hmm.
and lift with his legs. So he did, and that's when it came out okay.
That's
the only time took a second take for
yeah.
that.
Okay, I see. And what was working with Janet Leigh like? I've listened to some of your interviews before, and you say she was quite outstandish in some ways.
Yeah, she was. I didn't work with her at all.
No,
I saw her. She came on the set when she had to work, but
yeah.
we didn't talk or anything. I talked with Tony Perkins. He was real nice. We played word games, stuff like that between shots.
I see.
Vera Miles and John Gavin and Arbogast came on and talked and just were real nice and everything. But she was standoffish.
I see.
So she was cold. I didn't take it as anything.
Everybody
was different.
I see. So my other question for you was, with her getting all the credit for the shower scene, did that ever hurt you personally?
Yes, it did.
Yeah.
I didn't take everybody that had to do with the film had to sign a disclosure saying that they would not discuss the film at all. So I never did.
Okay.
I worked with a lot of people, I could have mentioned it, but I didn't. I just put it out of my mind. I didn't know it was going to turn out to be what it turned out to be.
Yes.
The shower scene is.
Yes.
It's very memorable.
It sure is, yes.
Yeah, it's That's really... basically the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But in 1985, I was in Phoenix, Arizona, and I was at the local library, and they had a section, you know, new arrivals, and I see that she had a book up there, an autobiography, and I thought, ooh. So I opened it up and looked in the index and found shower scene and
yes.
looked at all the pages, and my name isn't mentioned in the book.
That's what I thought.
And
yes.
And she claims that she did everything.
Exactly.
You know, trouble she went through to find all this and that to wear and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, if you're going to lie about that, what else are you lying about?
That's
what
right, Marley.
I'm not
going to
read this. Mm-hmm. I just put it back up there and that was it. And I thought, you know, you're a big star, but you're just too big, you know,
to be truthful.
Us little people type things.
I don't
know. I didn't feel that, but I just felt hurt, I guess, really.
For sure.
Anyway,
mm-hmm.
somebody mentioned, it was a few years ago, that, you know, it's a shame that you didn't get the notoriety.
Exactly.
You know, at that time. And I said, oh, no. I said, it's wonderful how it's come into my life now.
Is
then
it?
And I'm going to take it as, you know, okay,
mm-hmm.
because I was very busy.
I just moved in my new house today. heart, but I got squared away. Bell started ringing and chains rattled out. I knew I'd moved in a haunted house. Still I made up in my mind to stay. Nothing was gonna drive me away. When I seen something that give me the creep. Had one big eye and a two big feet. I stood right still and I did the freeze. He did the stroll right up to me. Made a noise with his feet that sound like a drum. Say you'll be here when the morning comes. Say yes, I'll be here when the morning comes. I'll be right here and I ain't gonna run. I bought this house, now you know I'm bald. Ain't no hang gonna run me off. In my kitchen, my stove was a blazing hot. Coffee was a boiling in the pot. The grease had melted in my hand. I had a hunk of meat in my hand. From outer space there sat a man. On a hot stove with a pots and pans. Say that's hot, I began to shout. He drank a hot coffee right from the spout. He ate the raw meat right from my hand. Drank a hot grease from the frying pan. He said to me, now you better run. Don't be here when the morning comes. See, yes, I'll be here when the morning comes.
Well, all you ghosting witches out there in Radio Land, this is your host with the most country western music, Johnny Woodlock, and today's Halloween music. As we pay tribute to the end of the second hour here this morning, I'd like to just play us out into the 10 o'clock hour with some more great gospel favorites to do with the Prince of Darkness, none other than Satan himself. First, we'll hear from the classic by King of Country Music, Roy Acuff, and The Devil's Train. Then we'll follow that with an old classic by the Wagon Master, Porter Wagoner, and Satan Has a River. With that, I'll spook y'all with these classics and talk to y'all on the other side.
The devil's train is long and black. It rides the rails of fear. It's heading for destruction now with a drunken engineer. Oh Lord, please stop that devil's train before it is too late. And teach them how to bow their heads before they seal their fate. Oh, listen to that whistle scream like echoes from the gloom. The throttle's wide, she's spouting steam. She's on her way to doom. Long and black, it's beautiful to see. It offers you temptation, but it gives you misery. Oh Lord, please stop that devil's train before it is too late. And teach them how to bow their heads before they seal their fate. Oh, happiness is free. It's on its way to heaven now, to spend eternity. Oh Lord, please stop that devil's train before it is too late, and teach them how to bow their heads before they seal their fate.
Satan's got a river, deep and wide. Yes, Satan's got a river, and it's so deep and wide. He's got folks a-swimming in the warm, smooth tide. But someday Satan's river, it's gonna run dry. What was once a smooth river, hot lava will make the tide. Stay clear of Satan's river, heaven's on either side. Satan's got a river, deep and wide. Yes, Satan's got a river, and it's so deep and wide. He's got folks a-swimming in the warm, smooth tide. Big yachts are sailing Satan's river so smooth, never stopping or thinking about God's golden rule. When the river starts sinking, they'll cry, I've been a fool. 'Cause Satan's got a river, it's so deep and wide. Yes, Satan's got a river, and it's so deep and wide. He's got folks a-swimming in the warm, smooth tide. Satan's got a river, deep and wide. Yes, Satan's got a river, and it's so deep and wide. He's got folks a-swimming in the warm, smooth tide.
Did the Monster Mash.
The Monster Mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the mash.
Hi, this is Mark Muncy from Erie, Florida, and I just wanted to say hey to Johnny Woodlock and the Wayback Country Jamboree. We love the show all the way down here in Florida. We're big fans. We love that you have us on every Halloween to tell some spooky stories, and we are excited to can do that again this year. Keep up the great work, and as always, see you on the other side.
Then you can monster mash.
Well, now, friends, we're all on the other side of 10 o'clock here this morning. And as we pay tribute to the werewolves and goblins and witches and warlocks out there in Radio Land, I'd like to just remind you all that this is the Halloween season. And for those tuning in, we are celebrating the 7th anniversary and the 7th annual tribute to the Wayback Haunted Hayride. Whoa! And we are sitting on the other side of 10 o'clock. And we're still coming to you via the Woodlock Ranch and Studio Station in Cornwall, Ontario.
on the St. Lawrence Seaway. We can also be heard via local radio dials at CFRC 101.9 FM from the downtown Kingston, Ontario, Limestone City of Canada. And we can also be heard via worldwide spiderweb at www.cfrc.ca and local Coach